Hello and welcome to episode number 17 of Nerds Talk Movies, the NerdStash.com's premier podcast for all things movies and TV throughout the week. I'm your host, Johnny Reynolds, and we have a ton of comic book related things to talk about. But first, I'm joined as always by Taylor Cole. Taylor, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic, man. Can't wait to get into the stories, and I really can't wait to talk about what I've been watching this week.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Before we do get into that, though, let me remind our listeners that you can follow us on Twitter at Nerdstash Show, and you can join our Discord channel at the Nerdstash community. Also, please check out the site, thenerdstash.com, where we've got writers churning out daily content on all kinds of nerdy topics. And of course, if you like what you hear, please subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you desire. We are pretty much everywhere. Also, if you haven't already, go check out the latest episode of the Nerdstash Show, our video game podcast, where we break down Microsoft's purchase of Bethesda. That was a fun one to dive into. But with that out of the way, on with the show. So, Taylor, what have you been watching this past week?
So let's start off with my boring one, which is crazy, because this show is amazing. Dragon Ball Z Abridged by Team Four Star. I just finished rewatching it. I love this finale of the show. It does such a good job at bringing all the comedy aspects of it and kind of taking it seriously for a minute. And so a serious finale that was breaking up into three parts, it just does such a great job with the source material. But, Johnny.
Yes.
The other thing I've been watching, I've been told this is a good show. And every time I go to watch it, I'm like, I'll go watch something else. I finally got to Netflix and watched Hannibal. I did this on Tuesday. I'm on season 3 already.
Good.
The
Lord,
end of
that was fast.
Three. This show is incredible.
Wow.
And I cannot believe like how good it is. And actually how it was allowed to do half of the stuff it was allowed to. Because I believe it was like on NBC or Fox or something. So I'm very shocked they got away with a few things. But this show, season one especially for me, it does such a good job of putting this person, the main character, Will. He's like a FBI profiler for serial killers and these insane people, and he's supposed to put his own mind in their shoes. And it kind of shows, like, you can't really be normal from that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it affects him so greatly, and you just see him slowly descend into becoming this insane person. And his empathy with Hannibal is just weirdly a good friendship. I don't know. Like, there's so many layers in this show, too. We talked about Bethesda and Xbox and the Nerdstash show, how many layers are in that. Same thing here.
Nice. Yeah, I haven't seen much of Hannibal. I remember watching it like right when it started on TV as it was airing. I remember getting into it. And the year that it started was the year that I graduated college. And so I moved to California for a year for like an internship, and then this was before like, you know, streaming services were literally everywhere. So I had no way to watch it, so I just fell off of it. But I remember like the first few episodes just being totally grossed out. There's a mushroom episode early on in season one, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that definitely remember that. Like, the sad part is,
super gross.
As there's so many gross things, it is easy to forget something like that.
Right.
But what really does keep me coming back to this show is just the way that they treat their characters.
Mm-hmm.
And just their mental, how they're handling all these crazy things, because anybody, that mushroom scene you're talking about, that could have been the only crazy thing in the show, and it would have traumatized anybody for life.
Yeah.
And that's honestly one of 100 things that happened to these characters. So it's really cool to see them all kind of go, and especially in season 3, a lot of these characters are in so many different paths. I'm trying not to spoil anything here.
Right.
And also, I'm not somebody who's seen Silence of the Lambs before or any of the Hannibal Lecter stories, but I'm aware that they are taking some stuff from the movies and other lore from that character, so they have very good source material to work with. But what they've done with it, with the imagery and how they use Will Graham and his mental psyche throughout the show, is the most engrossing thing I've seen all year.
Yeah, you hear about a lot of shows that are, like, you know, really well regarded and that were canceled that didn't deserve to be canceled, and people have always wanted to see them revived. And that's, I think, the latest example of one of those shows. Like, people who watched it really, really loved it. It's actually my roommate's favorite TV show ever. But
and Mad, I've never
gone back to it.
Mads Mikkelsen, to me, everybody always says how great he is, and I've always seen him in things like Doctor Strange or Rogue One, and I would always think, yeah, he's pretty good, but not seeing what everybody else is seeing. And then I saw this show, and I was like, nope, that's what everybody saw and said, that this dude needs to be cast in everything, because he is spectacular as Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, those movies don't really do him justice as an actor, I think.
No, they definitely don't. So just, if you haven't seen this show, go on Netflix and watch it. You will be engrossed. Honestly, I was watching this show, like, on the side while I was working on something, and I found myself so engrossed by it, like, I kept looking to the side. And then about 45 minutes in, I was like, man, this show is so intense. And then, this is mild spoilers, Hannibal Lecter doesn't show up till like halfway through the first episode. Maybe even longer. And as soon as I saw him, I was like, oh crap, that's what this show's called. I even forgot what I was watching. Like, I was so engrossed into what Will Graham's story and the killer he was trying to capture.
Well, that's good then, that it doesn't just, you know, hook you in with the thing that, you know, everyone knows, the character of Hannibal Lecter, but actually, you know, builds up to that and takes the time to build the other character as well, or the other main character. But nice.
So what have you been watching, Johnny? Because also, I didn't say The Boys this week because I haven't had a chance to watch The Boys.
Well, I did watch the newest episode of The Boys, and it is, I feel like I say this for every episode, it's pretty freaking wild. There's a really, really, I'm not going to spoil anything, obviously. There's a really, really great set piece in the big chunk, or in the big, like, middle portion of this episode.
Isn't there always, though?
And it is really, really, really intense. But then every now and then, when it just has you on the edge of your seat, and, you know, pure Boys fashion, it'll just throw something completely absurd at you, and you'll just be like, what in the world was that? So there's definitely a couple of moments like that. So it's really, really great. It's really entertaining. There's also a lot of backstory on Frenchie that really built up that character. So it's a really great Frenchie episode. Also, the only other thing I've been watching, I started Succession, which is an HBO show. It just won several Emmys. And so I thought I'd get into it. It's only got two seasons so far, but it's really, really good. I've watched the first three episodes. And if you don't know, it's this kind of tense drama about this incredibly wealthy family. The patriarch, who is someone who founded this multi-billion dollar media company. And he's set to retire, and one of his sons is meant to, you know, move up into his place, but then the son is kind of fumbling a pretty important deal. So then the dad decides, no, I'm not going to retire, even though it's like the first episode is his 80th birthday. Anyway, so it's all about, like, so far, I've only watched a couple of episodes. It's all about just, like, all of these different fires start going off within this company. And it's just about how this family can figure out ways to put them out as quickly as possible and prepare for the next one. So if you're into that type of show, definitely give Succession a watch on HBO. I know Adam McKay worked on it, and Will Ferrell executive produced it. And Adam McKay has, you know, transitioned from making comedies like Step Brothers to more like, you know, darker political things, like he did... God, I'm blanking on the name, about the housing crisis with Christian Bale
that came out a couple years.
Yes, The Big Short.
With Steve Carell as well.
Yes, that movie, yes. So he did that. So it sort of seems like he's transitioned into darker dramas. And he does a good job at it. So, yeah, Succession.
I haven't seen that. But I'm surprised to see, like, The Boys is... I know it's so popular now. I think its popularity has skyrocketed since season two started.
Oh yeah.
And while I believe most of the response has been, yeah, this season's great, I have seen a little bit of, well, season one was a lot better. I'm not seeing what these people are saying.
That season one was better?
You know what I mean? Yeah. and how intense it was, and it kept you hooked every episode. Maybe it's the binging aspect, since we can't binge it all. It may seem that way, but
yeah,
but I thought I was always pointing out
everything with Stormfront and Kimiko and Homelander being, you know, a weird, crazy person, and especially with this last episode with all the Frenchie stuff. Like, yeah, I love this season.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about
spoiler talk.
Yeah,
like when the season's over. It's just
yeah,
it's that might be the one detriment of this season to me. I'm not saying like it's been perfect so far. There's some stories I haven't really cared for.
Yeah,
but the one detriment so far has been, well, we gotta wait till Friday every week to see it, and sometimes some episodes are just slower.
We've been
that bad taste in your mouth. You know what
we've been conditioned to the binging of streaming services.
The Mandalorian had the same problem. So
yeah, fair enough. But you know what? Let's just keep the Let's just continue with The Boys, because our story of the week is actually related to that show, and that there's a spinoff in the works. So popularity behind The Boys continues to grow. Amazon's very R-rated take on superheroes now has a spin-off series in development. So this comes from Variety, and the show will focus on younger Supes attending a Vought-owned college. The announcement describes it as part college show, part Hunger Games, and the satirical and risque tone of the main series will carry over. Spin-off will follow several would-be heroes as they explore their sexuality, enhance their abilities, and compete for various contracts throughout different cities. Craig Rosenberg, who writes and executive produces The Boys, is writing the pilot. He will also serve as showrunner and as an executive producer for the new show. However, he will be bringing several creatives from the original show with him. Creator Eric Kripke will executive produce, and Point Grey Pictures' Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, and James Weaver will executive produce, and finally, Original Films' Neil H. Moritz and Pavan Shetty will executive produce. Amazon Studios and Sony Pictures Television will produce. God, I said produce a lot. Also, with this news, Amazon announced that when comparing the viewership of season 2 and season 1, they saw an 89% increase in viewers. So that should tell you how well this second season is doing. Of course, they knew it was going to do really well. They renewed it for a third season before season 2 started airing. And then they also added that after show hosted by Aisha Tyler, which I have not watched yet. Taylor, I don't know if you have.
I have not either.
Well, all right. Well, it exists for people who want to listen to other people talk about The Boys. But, Taylor, what do you think about The Boys getting a spinoff and a college-based spinoff at that?
I actually really like the synopsis for this. It's so different, and it makes fun of, like they mentioned, part Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And putting that into The Boys' world is very interesting to me. Because at first when I read The Boys' spinoff is in the works, I'm like, oh no. Don't ruin it. Like, we have a good thing going. Not everything's got to have a spinoff. Not everything's got to have a sequel. But then I actually do sit down and look at it. This actually sounds like a really good idea. And one of the things I really like about it is that Eric Kripke is coming in to help out as well. Because he has been such a great talent to work with on The Boys as well.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember we talked about that shark scene.
And oh my god.
Season 2, episode 1, and the way he was talking about it in, what was it, The Rap? An interview with The Rap or something?
Yeah, I think so.
And it keep that creative team, the entire team, bring them over, have this spinoff, I think it could work out.
Yeah, see, that's what has me excited, is that all of these creatives that, you know, worked on making The Boys as great as it is, are coming over to work on this new show. And, I mean, I agree with you, you know, our tendency to hear that something popular is getting the spinoff is to sort of roll our eyes and groan. And because, you know, we've all been burned by spinoffs. Something will be immensely popular, you know, like Harry Potter, and then it will receive like a watered down kind of disappointment, Fantastic Beasts. But this actually sounds...
Sorry, I didn't hear... I'd heard something about Harry Potter.
Yeah.
That's all.
Okay. Exactly. No, Fantastic Beasts. The first one is good. The second one is garbage. And I'll just leave it at that. But I am excited for the spinoff. Like I said, with all those creatives coming over. But also, the synopsis just sounds entertaining. Because we know And, you know, if you haven't watched The Boys, spoiler, I guess, that these spoilers for season one, that these superheroes are made and not born because Vought produces this drug that makes the superheroes and injects children and then, you know, watches them grow. So to have a Vought-owned college where all of these characters are, you know, developing their powers and, you know, competing and enhancing what they are capable of, I think that's a really interesting concept for a show. And just to have that, you know, that competitive Hunger Games twist in there where, like, and if you've watched The Boys, you know, like, people die very, very violently and very suddenly. So I think we're going to get a lot of that just in a classroom setting. It'll be interesting.
Here's the one thing I'm scared by, though.
Yeah.
I love the fact that the creative team's coming back. I like the idea of the Hunger Games kind of twist on it. And it also being college meets Hunger Games. But the one thing I've always wondered, can the boys survive without Homelander? Homelander is a character that is so, like, vile, evil, but he's so damn entertaining.
Yeah, yeah.
He keeps you glued to the screen no matter what he does. In a very bad way, he's hilarious. Like, it's just, can a show in this universe survive without that character?
I think it can. I mean, I know that he brings the most, like, he brings a lot of violent absurdity to the show, which, you're not wrong, is very, very entertaining, but...
And also, like, he's the character who's kind of unkillable. He has the plot armor, and he's the villain, so you can't really do that for the spinoff without it seeing redundant. So I'm curious to see what they really do with this. And who really the villains are going to be in it? Maybe every college student? Like, is there going to be anybody likable in this? Or
yeah, who knows? I mean, and I'm also curious as to see if and how it'll cross over with The Boys. Because as we've seen with season two progressing, Vought is constantly having to fend off, you know, all these different problems. Especially as we saw with the beginning of season two.
Controversies and all that.
There's just lots and lots going on there. You know, what will happen at this college should something happen to Vought and The Boys? I'm just curious to see all that crossover.
Very good point. Yeah. You ready to move on? Or?
Yeah, let's move on to the next bit of movie news, which is some good casting news. Aldous Hodge joins Dwayne Johnson's Black Adam movie as Hawkman. So most recently, Hodge co-starred in the acclaimed 2020 hit The Invisible Man. Previously, the actor played roles in projects such as Straight Outta Compton, Black Mirror, and Leverage. So according to The Hollywood Reporter, who broke the news, they also said that Justice Society of America members Dr. Fate and Cyclone have yet to be cast for the film. But we do know that they are definitely appearing. Here's a quick character description for Hawkman via the THR report. Hawkman, who first appeared in 1940s Flash Comics number 1, is one of a pair of lovers from ancient Egypt destined to constantly be reincarnated throughout time and space, with many rebirths leading to an emergence as a hawk-themed hero using both giant wings and an alien element called the Nth Metal, I think that's how you pronounce that, Nth, which negates gravity and allows him to fly. In contemporary times, he's Carter Hall, an archaeologist turned adventurer who struggles with anger issues and his ability to control a mace. So, Taylor, big DC guy, are you excited about this casting?
I am cautiously optimistic about this casting.
Oh, yeah?
I haven't seen Aldous Hodge in The Invisible Man. He was barely in Straight Outta Compton, if I remember correctly. And I did not see the episodes of Black Mirror he was in. The only thing I've seen him in is Leverage. And if anybody who's seen that show, he does not play somebody you would say is a superhero.
Okay.
He plays the hacker in this Thieves Guild kind of group. Ocean's 11 group, I guess. So I haven't seen him play a character like this before. But he has the talent, in my opinion, to pull it off. And I'm kind of just really down for those JSA characters in this Black Adam movie. I'm curious to see if he's going to work with the JSA. Are they kind of the villains in this movie? Or
they'll probably be. I mean, like, Black Adam is a villain, but they will be the villains to him.
The antagonists.
The antagonists, yeah. They'll be his antagonists, because we know Black Adam is a pretty tough dude. Yeah, I'm excited for this casting as well. I don't remember him. I've only seen Straight Outta Compton once, and it was when it came out in theaters. And I remember really liking it, but you're right. He's not one of the main three actors. But I did see The Invisible Man when that came out earlier this year, and he's very good in it. He kind of gets overshadowed by the lead actress, but he is good in it. And he's also in Hidden Figures, for those of you listening. If you've seen Hidden Figures, he's also in that. But yeah, I'm excited for this casting. I don't know much about Hawkman as a character anyway, but I'm excited to be introduced to more characters through DC. And I'm just excited to finally keep getting news about Black Adam, because we've known that Black Adam was being worked on for a decade or something ridiculous like that, and we're finally starting to see it all come together. So even though it's like bits of casting news that I'm for characters or actors that I'm not super familiar with, I'm just excited to see that project coming together.
Yeah, and finally getting a little bit of plot details and here's who else is going to be in this thing. Yeah, because, like you said, it's been like 10 years, it feels like, since they said, yeah, we got The Rock, and he's going to play Black Adam, and it's going to be huge, and I haven't heard anything since.
Yeah,
when it comes to Hawkman, too, I'm not very aware of the character either, other than his appearances in the CW shows,
right?
More particularly Legends of Tomorrow, and they have a low bar. Let's just say that, because Legends of Tomorrow is a fantastic show. The Hawk people are by far the worst aspects of it, so very low bar to live up to.
Right. I do like the concept, though, of someone being like constantly reborn to be a hero. I think that's interesting. I don't know if he completely retains his memories from his past life or not, but it's just a cool concept.
Yeah, I believe, I'm not sure this is that way in the comics, but both Hawkman and Hawkgirl are both resurrected, and they're supposed to, like, find each other and become heroes multiple times.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure Vandal Savage is involved in the comic story, but he was in Legends, so.
Oh, okay.
Might I see Vandal Savage, too? I don't know.
Interesting. It's all coming together. Any other thoughts on this?
Nope, I'm ready to move on.
Alright, next bit, jumping over to the Marvel side now with some TV news, and that Samuel L. Jackson is set to return as Nick Fury in a new Disney Plus show. So, per Variety, Jackson is coming back to star in the project with Mr. Robot's Kyle Bradstreet set to write and produce. Other than that, it appears that details around the project are being kept under wraps. So, the questions here are, what could this be, and also, are we getting to a point where Marvel is creating too much TV content? Taylor, what do you think?
I'm very surprised we haven't gotten a Samuel L. Jackson like Nick Fury movie or TV show yet.
You know, me too. It's like Black Widow, like it feels like it should have happened several years ago.
Years in the making.
Yeah.
And now that Marvel Phase 4, we're in Phase 4.
Moving phase to Phase 4,
we're just now getting him starring in something. I know he starred in Captain Marvel, but that was in the 90s. He was de-aged.
Yeah.
I would really like to see, like, a day in the life of Nick Fury. This dude who brought the Avengers together. He's like the super spy. I think that could be a very interesting story to tell. And Samuel L. Jackson, anybody who's ever seen him in anything, which everybody here listening has,
of course,
he's just amazing.
Yeah.
Very entertaining. But when it comes to the, are we getting to a point where Marvel is creating too much content? Possibly. It really depends on, like, is WandaVision, Winter Soldier, and Falcon, Loki, are they all one season off shows? Because if not, we are definitely heading in that territory.
I think they are supposed to be one off shows. I know for a fact that they've said that some of them are one-off shows, but I just can't remember for sure which ones they are. But also, I see where you're coming from. It does depend. Because we haven't started with the Disney Plus shows yet, and we'll talk about...
We haven't started with Phase 4 yet, man.
No, we haven't.
We're not even to Phase 4 yet. We have so many movies to get in. There's still Blade, Guardians 3, Spider-Man 3, Doctor Strange 2.
So much.
And then the TV shows, you have Moon Knight, She-Hulk, Ms. Marvel.
All the other ones you just mentioned.
And all the other ones I mentioned before. Hawkeye, which is supposed to also have Kate Bishop in it, supposedly.
Yes.
Or is that a separate thing?
No, that's the same Hawkman. That's the same Hawkeye. Yeah.
So, yeah, well, there's just so much here that you're kind of just like, man, I hope some of these shows, even like Moonlight or Ms. Marvel, I kind of do hope some of them are one-offs.
Yeah.
Just so we don't get burnt out here.
I know that Kevin Feige has said that Ms. Marvel is supposed to be a one-off show. I think six to eight episodes, and then they're going to bring her into the movies. But I'm not sure about, you know, some of the other ones. But also, I don't know if I really want a show based on Nick Fury. I mean, there are certain questions that I want answered. Like, I want to know, you know, what the deal with in the Spider-Man, the last Spider-Man credits, when he's just, you know, hanging out with the Skrulls. I want to know what that was all about. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to know what that was all about, but I don't think, you know, those answers warrant a whole TV show. Maybe they do. Maybe, I don't know. But, like I said, with Black Widow, I feel the same way about this. Like, it feels like it should have already happened, and by now it's kind of too late. Like, Marvel is moving in so many of these other crazy directions. You know, we're getting Eternals and, like, super otherworldly. Doctor Strange is introducing, like, the multiverse of madness, and it's going to be out there weird stuff, and I'm ready to move in that direction. And
these grounded
a show based on Nick Fury sort of seems like it should have happened in one of the past phases. But that being said, I'm still going to watch it. It's probably still going to be pretty good, because, like you said, Samuel L. Jackson is great, and is great as the character. And I love Marvel, so of course I'm going to watch it. I'm just not nearly as excited about it as most of the other shows that are going to be coming.
I also get what you're saying about, and I think it would have been better if it was like a phase one or phase two thing.
Yeah.
Because also, you got to figure, when did he start playing Nick Fury? 2007? So 13 years ago?
Well, they probably would have filmed in 2007, but he appeared in like the Iron Man credits. So that was 2008.
Yeah, so probably about 2007, 2008.
Yeah.
It's been like 12, 11 years
since
he started playing this character. And the unfortunate thing is Samuel Jackson is getting pretty old. So it kind of is getting to that, like, Harrison Ford with Indiana Jones. Do you want to see him going out there and being an action star? In 2010, 2011, most definitely. 2020, I do see the hesitation for it. But Nick Fury is a character that I think should be fleshed out a little more, since here lately he's kind of gotten lost in the shuffle. Of like, yeah, he's that one dude who brought the Avengers together. He was in Spider-Man, but...
He was absent for like a big chunk of movies. After Age of Ultron, he was just kind of like gone. And then he just started creeping his way back in. And then, of course, he was in Captain Marvel. So
I get the hesitation
about
it. Yeah. I know I've seen people also say, could this be where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. cast people come in back in? I'm not sure what fans of that show would think, but if they just seriously had their series finale and it ended the story for those characters, I'm not sure you want to bring them back in so soon.
No, I wouldn't want that. I've seen so much S.H.I.E.L.D. I never watched the whole show, but I watched most of the whole show. And just with all of the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff there, all of the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff in the earlier phases of the MCU, I'm just kind of shielded out, you know? Maybe that's another reason why I'm not super excited for this. I know it sounds like I'm kind of crapping on it, but...
No, it's a good conversation we're a huge comic book movie fans
and everything.
But even us can get burnt out on it after a certain point. So you got to be very selective of things. And this is something, like you mentioned, Black Widow. I think this was a few years in the making. You might have made it too late. I know we're saying this and we're probably going to regret it like a year and a half from now, because it's probably going to be amazing. And come up with some kind of way this show could be, because it might not be a Nick Fury show. He might just co-star in it.
Yeah.
But I do get the hesitation for it, because we have so many TV shows out there, and you're just sitting there and you're like, Nick Fury, why didn't you do this 10 years ago and come up with something new with all the characters you just got?
Yeah. I don't know. seems a little dated, but I'm sure we'll be proven wrong. Most of what Marvel has is fantastic. So, speaking of which, WandaVision got a trailer released a few days after we asked whether or not we would get an official trailer for WandaVision soon. Disney decided to release an official trailer. So, I thought it looked great. I am, like I just got done talking about with the Samuel Jackson show, I am all for Marvel to start pushing out into the weird corners, and this looks like that. So, but Taylor, what do you think?
We just talked about that Nick Fury thing, and me and you were both kind of conflicted about it for different reasons. And I was definitely this way about WandaVision. I thought the idea for it was kind of dumb going in. I thought the name for it was dumb, and then
the name is still dumb.
It definitely is. But when then they start to explain what it is, and they showed this trailer. This trailer was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like it shows the kind of like, it's kind of showing a little bit to me how much I like these shows that have these metal psyche.
Oh, yeah.
Things with characters, with Hannibal and now WandaVision. Because it shows Scarlet Witch like trying to go through grief and possibly bring Vision back in some way.
Yeah.
And that line where Vision taps that girl and she asks, like, are you dead? And like, no, why would you ask that? And she just goes,
you are.
Because you are. That's by far the best line in this trailer.
Yeah.
So well done.
No, I love the whole, like, black and white 1950s, you know, sitcom vibe that, you know, is so just romanticized in pop culture. And for this show to use that and sort of like break it apart from within, because, you know, Wanda is clearly, you know, creating this alternate reality, to see how that's going to, you know, crumble with her. And what that'll mean for her powers. I'm just really excited to dive into that.
And also, what is she actually doing in the real world?
Exactly.
Is she changing reality? Like, what is she messing up? Because that girl seemed, like, so weirded out. And she's in the, like, television thing. Which, by the way, stupid idiot right here. Yeah. I did not realize that WandaVision was also, like, a play on television. But it's Wanda's for... So I felt like an idiot after putting this together. I was telling my brother, and he was like, yeah, I knew this going in. You didn't? I was like, well, don't have to be rude about it, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a little play on words. Yeah, I'm excited for this show. There are a lot of people after this trailer came out were just like, is this how Marvel is going to introduce mutants to the MCU, with her like playing around and with different realities?
That'd be very cool.
That would be cool. And yeah, I don't have any thoughts on that. It would be really cool. We'll see if it happens. I don't know if they would be introducing them this soon, but, you know, we'll see. Maybe
we
know that WandaVision is supposed to play into Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So maybe if we don't get it here, you know, Wanda appears in that movie and then maybe we'll get a hint towards them there.
We don't have this in the show notes, but I do remember reading that this trailer supposedly performed so well, like even up there with Avengers Infinity War and Endgame.
Oh, wow. Like with view counts?
Yeah, with like, I think, engagement too. So it kind of goes to show, like, you take MCU away from people for about a year, people are going to want it back. So
they're going to eat up anything that you give them.
And that sounds like such a knock at WandaVision. No, the show does really look great. But you can't sit here and lie to our faces and go like, yeah, we expected WandaVision to be this thing. And not it being Spider-Man 3 or Doctor Strange 2 or Black Panther 2.
Yeah. I will definitely be watching it. It doesn't have... It's still just 2020, right? They didn't give a full release date?
Yeah, just 2020 right now. But they are running out of time, so...
Yeah. I would expect it maybe late November, maybe early December. Give, you know, Mandalorian Season 2 some breathing room. That's when I would expect it. But we still don't know. We'll just have to see. Moving on from that, we got another comic book TV show in the works. So an HBO Max series focused on the Suicide Squad's Peacemaker is currently in development. John Cena is attached to star, and James Gunn will write all 8 episodes of the season. The Suicide Squad's Peter Safran will executive produce. The official press release reads, OF, I'm censoring myself because this is a family-friendly program, it's Peacemaker. HBO Max is set to explore the origins of the Peacemaker character, the master of weapons from the highly anticipated upcoming The Suicide Squad film, and the new Max original action-adventure comedy series, Peacemaker. HBO Max has given a straight-to-series order of 8 episodes for the first season of the show. John Cena will reprise his role from the Suicide Squad movie to star in the series, and the film's acclaimed writer/director James Gunn will write all 8 episodes of Peacemaker and will direct multiple episodes, including the first. Gunn and the Suicide Squad producer Peter Safran will serve as executive producers of the series, with Cena as co-executive producer. Based on characters from DC, Peacemaker will be produced by Gunn's Troll Court Entertainment and the Safran Company in association with Warner Brothers Television. Peacemaker is scheduled to begin production in early 2021, prior to Gunn beginning work on the next Guardians of the Galaxy film. Many are speculating online that this spoils that Cena's Peacemaker makes it out of the Suicide Squad alive, which to this point has used the tagline, "Don't get attached." Gunn addressed the speculation on Twitter as well, saying, "Exploring the origins does not necessarily mean prequel." So, Taylor, what do you think about this?
My bad. I kind of screwed up your outline there. I should have put something in between that. It's all right. No worries. But yeah, I'm kind of new from the Suicide Squad and the way John Cena kind of looked and what his character was going to be that he was probably going to steal the show here.
And oh, well, yeah.
You can kind of tell from the Suicide Squad, from the way this series being announced, that, yeah, he does that. He's going to absolutely steal the show in this movie. I can't wait for it. As for this show, it's an interesting one, because I never would have guessed in 2020 we would have got an announcement for a Peacemaker TV show at HBO Max.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected that either. But you can tell just in like the brief footage that we've been shown. I agree. John Cena is absolutely going to steal that movie. But also, here's something funny. I knew nothing about Peacemaker. Probably like a lot of people. And then, you know, he's coming out in the Suicide Squad, and you put this this in the show notes. So I was like, let me look up Peacemaker, exactly what his deal is. So I'm looking at the DC like fandom wiki right now. Peacemaker is a peace agent. His motives are driven by an extremist form of pacifism, which makes him love peace so much he would kill for it. So that in itself is interesting. But also I looked up his powers and abilities, and according to this wiki, he's excellent in hand-to-hand combat, firearms, you know, all that sort of stuff. He's an excellent fighter. But he also suffered from bipolar disorder and possibly schizophrenia, believing that the souls of people he killed inhabited his helmet and spoke to him. He was also plagued by hallucinations of his dead father, egging him on to violence. So, yeah.
That's lot less comedic than I thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah, it's dark. But I think that James Gunn is just the type of person to make fun of that dark. So yeah, I'm excited for this show.
Well, at least we know the hallucinations won't see him.
Yeah, that's true.
John Cena, you know, they can't see. Alright, let's just move on to the next story.
Moving on. Next story, brace yourselves, is Game of Thrones related. Hopefully the anger has died down by now. But the showrunners have explained why they didn't introduce Lady Stoneheart. So we are going to be getting into some show and book spoilers ahead. So we'll have timestamps in the description. If you want to skip this part, go for it. But from EW's James Hibbard, his upcoming book called Fire Cannot Kill a Dragon, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss revealed why they didn't include the fan-favorite character Lady Stoneheart in the HBO series. Now, once again, warning you, spoilers for the books and the TV show, so last chance to skip ahead. But in the books, Lady Stoneheart is a resurrected Catelyn Stark. So we have a description that we pulled from Polygon because they gave a really great description of the character. Lady Stoneheart is the resurrected form of Catelyn Stark. Following the events of the Red Wedding, where Catelyn was murdered, Beric Dondarrion gives his life to resurrect Catelyn. But she's different when she returns to life. Her wounds from the wedding don't heal and prevent her from speaking. More importantly, she now has an all-consuming desire for vengeance over her and her family's betrayal. She takes control of the Brotherhood without banners and roams Westeros seeking her revenge against the Lannisters and the Freys. Back to the original story, Hibbard says that the showrunners debated putting Stoneheart in the series, but ultimately decided against it due to three reasons. First, the duo didn't want to ruin the fun for those book readers, saying, part of the reason we didn't want to put it in had to do with things coming up in George's books that we don't want to spoil by discussing them, which I very much appreciate because I read the books and am still looking forward to the sixth one, if that should ever be released. Jon Snow is another reason why Lady Stoneheart never appeared. According to Weiss and Benioff, they said, we knew we had Jon Snow's resurrection coming up. Too many resurrections start to diminish the impact of characters dying. We wanted to keep our powder dry for that. Finally, the showrunners thought bringing in Lady Stoneheart could also diminish the incredible Red Wedding scene. So the question here is, would we have liked to see Lady Stoneheart in the show, or were Weiss and Benioff right here? So, I love Game of Thrones. I'm a huge, huge fan. I started reading the books before the third season came out, because I remember like just binge reading through those books and actually getting caught up with the show. I read the Red Wedding section of the book the day before the Red Wedding episode aired, so I had to go through that crap twice, and that was terrible. But then the reveal at the end of the third book that Catelyn Stark is quote-unquote alive, that was a really, really wonderful twist, and it's something that I kind of just kept waiting to happen for like a couple of years, because the Brotherhood without banners, you know, they kind of disappear in the show for a little while, and then they come back up later in season six, and then when they came back on screen, I was just like, yes, Lady Stoneheart's about to happen, and then it just never did. So I would have really loved to see Lady Stoneheart in the show. I think it's a really, really great twist. Obviously, we didn't know that Jon Snow's resurrection was coming, so I get where they're coming from here. Still, it would have been nice to see her. But Taylor, what do you think?
Please don't make me do what I'm about to do here.
Oh, do it.
I'm about to agree with Weiss and Benioff, which is just not good on the internet.
Not a good look.
Okay, before I get into it, it has to be said so I don't get lashed online here.
Uh-huh.
I did like the final season. I absolutely hated the finale. I thought it was a waste, and I thought the showrunners did not do a good job on that. So I get where the hatred comes from. I understand. That said, I actually agree with them on not bringing Lady Stoneheart in, mainly because of the Jon Snow thing. If they did that before Jon Snow's resurrection, it would have really spelled it out for everybody before he even died. And been like, well, if anybody dies, we can just be brought back. And I know they did that with Beric, but that wasn't as huge of a scene as it would be Catelyn Stark.
He's not nearly as big of a character as Catelyn Stark is.
So Catelyn Stark coming back to life as this ghoulish character taking revenge, it would have been cool.
Yeah,
but ultimately, I do understand the let's save it for Jon Snow coming back.
Yeah,
and also, just in case we don't want to ruin the Red Wedding, because that's probably one of the top five scenes in history of television.
Oh my god! Yeah,
I'm not sure if it would have been more shocking to you to see, but how shocking was it for you reading?
Oh, it's pretty shocking. But I will say the show kind of ups the ante. For one,
the score.
Well, for sure. The score. And also, his wife is not there in the book. I don't even remember if they say that she's actually pregnant, but they really build up that relationship in the show, because she's barely a character. She actually has a different name in the book, too. She's entirely different. She's barely there. So they really, really built her up to just make it so much worse in the show.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do understand. It would have been really cool to see at the end of season 6. I knew about the character. I thought they were going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And I was kind of hyping my friends up to it, not like spoiling it, but being like, they're going to show something, man. I'm telling you, it's going to be so cool. Just wait for it. And I mean, when that awesome finale happened, I just kind of like took credit. I was like, yeah, that's what I thought was going to happen. That's what I was saying.
Yeah. And well, another thing you also have to consider is the actress.
Season finale. Sorry.
Right. The actress, Michelle Fairley, like, would she have wanted to go from, you know, a major starring role in this show to just being someone who can't talk, who probably doesn't get a lot of screen time, just, you know, to do the same thing that the books did, just to have that in there? So there's lots of things to consider.
Absolute
too.
Crap ton of makeup as well, probably.
Yeah, just to, I mean, if I were in her position and they offered me that, I'd be like, I mean, if I'm contracted to, sure, but I'm not going to be happy about it.
You just crushed the Red Wedding scene. It was a great, like, end for that, such a great tragic end for the character, and really most of that family, so I could understand, like, somebody not wanting to come back for it, too.
Yeah, so I think, like, the book reader in me is like, yeah, that's such a twist on top of a twist, that is such, that's so great to see that character come back in that way. But also, this is probably just one of those times, one of those situations where adapting something straight from the book to the screen just wouldn't work for a number of reasons. And that's just how it is. So, yeah, I guess you're right, Taylor. Weiss and Benioff.
It was the first time for everything.
At one point, knew what they were doing.
But I'm like you. At one point, by the series' end. Oof.
But also, I'm like you. I didn't hate the last season either. I thought the first half of season 8 is actually really great. I really like The Long Night. I know a lot of people complain that it was too dark. To them, I say, it's kind of the point. It's supposed to be chaotic. And it's only really in that initial, you know, rush of dead people. Before the dragons come out and they start burning everything. And then I've never had a problem seeing. But that is a tangent for another day. Let's move on. That's actually the last story that we had for TV news. So we're moving on to our lightning round. And if you haven't listened before, lightning round is exactly what it sounds like. Just smaller pieces of news that we wanted to mention and give a few thoughts on that didn't really warrant a huge discussion. First being that Black Widow has now been officially delayed. From November 6th, 2020, all the way to May 7th, 2021, putting it just over a year of when it was initially supposed to come out. Marvel also delayed Eternals and Shang-Chi. Regardless, with Black Widow being pushed back to 2021, this is going to be the first year without an MCU film since 2009, which is insane that it's been that long since we've gone without an MCU releasing this year. But it appears that WandaVision is the only bit of MCU that we're going to get in 2020. Are you surprised by this at all, Taylor?
Not surprised at all. We talked about this last week, and we both kind of thought it was a real possibility of happening. I believe we both discussed it going to Disney Plus, possibly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is the crazy thing to me is since 2009, there's been an MCU movie every year, and I might get some hate for saying this, but I think it's a good thing that we're kind of taking the year off, especially after Endgame and Far From Home, really ending the Infinity Saga.
It is nice to have some room in between that.
Now, if this was after Infinity War,
God,
all this crap hit, oh man, that would... would hate to know what the internet would be like right now.
Let's just be grateful that it didn't come to that.
But in 2020, Black Widow, I feel really bad for this movie, though, because we talked about Nick Fury was years late, so was this. This movie should have came out in Phase 2, Phase 3. Honestly, I could have foreseen a Black Widow movie coming out in Phase 2. It could have done well enough to become its own franchise. Instead, now it feels like this is a...
When the character is already... Oh, spoiler alert for Avengers Endgame.
You're just throwing spoilers in here to where I just have to put in timestamps all over the place, man.
Well, I feel like I just have to
go
say
and spoil
it. Yeah, it's coming late, way too late because the character's dead. And we're just doing a... What is this? after the third Captain America, but before all the Avengers stuff or whenever this is supposed to take place. Either way, it's too late. Still, I'm gonna watch it. Oh yeah, it is gonna introduce. And I do like Florence Pugh as an actress, so I'm excited to see her do more. Anyway, yeah, not surprising. Black Widow officially delayed. Next bit for the lightning round is that Justice League is receiving reshoots and a budget of $70 million. So this comes via the Wrap. Although initial reports for the Snyder Cut stated no additional shooting was needed, Zack Snyder is bringing back Ben Affleck, Gal Gadot, Henry Cavill, and Ray Fisher for a week of reshoots in October. The budget as a whole is around $70 million, which will likely include VFX in addition to the reshoots. However, Collider recently spoke with Cavill and asked the Superman star if they intend to shoot any new scenes for the Snyder Cut, and Cavill said, quote, "Not shooting anything additional, no. It's all stuff that has been already done. Obviously, I don't know how things are going to evolve and change and adapt, depending on now, a different length of movie, and whatever may happen in post-production. Whatever lessons may be learned from, what is it, 4 years since Justice League came out? 4 years is worth of fan reaction. For me, I'm now just watching the party." End quote. So yeah, important to remember, these are scenes that have already been shot, but that are just being, you know, reworked in some way. We don't know which scenes they are, obviously, but it'll be happening sometime in October. Just another piece of this, you know, once-in-a-lifetime kind of puzzle of the Snyder Cut. Taylor, any thoughts?
I'm just so confused at this point. The Snyder Cut wasn't real, then it's real, then we got a trailer with Hallelujah in it, and now we're getting reshoots, and we're kind of not, and we kind of are. I don't know. This is all sorts of confusing to me. I just want to see the movie/show. I don't even know how that's releasing, by the way. Is it releasing weekly as a TV show, or is it releasing what, all at once?
The 4-hour-long parts? That?
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll be all... I think it's supposed to be weekly. But saying that out loud, I'm like, that doesn't sound right. That sounds like a bad idea.
This sounds normal.
Yeah.
Everything about this doesn't make sense. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
I believe these reshoots when we actually see something from it. I'm not saying the Snyder Cut trailer didn't show anything new, by the way. It obviously did. But regardless, we've just been hearing this back and forth of, they're going to shoot new stuff, and no, they're not. It's just, come on now.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, next bit of news, we got a first look at Javicia. God, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Javicia Leslie in the Batwoman suit. Taylor, you are the DC fan or the Arrowverse expert. Any thoughts on this?
Not really, because it is literally...
from the neck up, yeah.
Yeah, it's the same suit as well from Batwoman Season 1, Ruby Rose's suit.
Yeah.
I know it said that Leslie is going to receive her own suit later in the season. That happens, that'll be much better to see. But for this, it's kind of just like a... cool.
Yeah, that's weird. I can't wait to see this character. Weird. It's weird that it's just the same suit. It's just, I mean, logically, she should get her own suit, yeah.
Storyline-wise, supposedly she finds the suit. That's what she uses the first few episodes. I think this has a chance. I know a lot of people rag on it, and Season 1 was not as bad as some people say. It really wasn't. People will say it leans too much into certain things. It really didn't. From what I saw, I only saw a few episodes. I gotta see the rest. But I think Season 2 has a very good opportunity here to kind of reboot itself and create a new atmosphere about the show. Well, and granted, a lot of it's unwarranted. It's a bunch of trolls online. But you can kind of create this new reboot in a way of, hey, this completely new character we came up with, here's what she's like.
Yeah, and hopefully they succeed at that. But I don't watch the Arrowverse shows, so I probably won't be watching this one, but I do wish them the best of luck. In other sadder, I guess depending on who you ask, DC Arrowverse news, Supergirl is ending with Season 6. The CW has announced that Supergirl will end after a 20-episode sixth season, which is set to air sometime in 2021. Per Deadline, we may know why the longtime superhero show is coming to an end so abruptly. Although Supergirl already planned to start production later in the year due to star Melissa Benoist's pregnancy, the COVID-19 pandemic will have had a major impact. Along with this, Supergirl has seen a slight decline in ratings. It said that the producers, the network, and Benoist all agreed that now was the time to end the series due to those reasons. So, Taylor, again, Arrowverse expert, what are your thoughts on Supergirl ending so abruptly?
It, honestly, I know the ratings thing comes up here, but honestly, from what I've read about it, it sounds more that it was more Benoist, like, her pregnancy, wanting to be a mother, wanting to take some time off, and you being a superhero in a 20-episode CW show really takes that.
A lot of time, yeah.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time, so 100% get the decision. Honestly, it also feels a little natural. I thought Arrow felt the same way, like we were going towards the end of that show's life cycle, and for them to go, like, okay, let's pull the plug, let's end this thing right, and they end it with Crisis, essentially. That's the one negative of this, is Supergirl's not going to get a Crisis crossover to end it. Granted, Arrow, you know, started this whole thing.
Yeah.
Ultimately, to me, though, with this kind of... The Arrowverse has a lot less to work with than typically other DC stuff. They didn't get Superman or Batman. They got Supergirl, The Flash, Green Arrow. And they've kind of used these as, like, their trinity. Now two-thirds of those are gone. I'm just so curious to see if the Arrowverse, how long it's going to last for. Because I feel like, naturally, this thing could end in 2 to 3 years. I know, obviously, money talks. It's going to go as long as it can. But naturally, I think you can end this right in 2-3 years. And kind of just start fresh on HBO Max.
Yeah, I'd like that. And six seasons is a pretty good run for a TV show, too.
No, and also, TV show, I'm not saying this, like, completely knocking. I love the Arrowverse shows. I will argue that they have done more than a lot of other TV shows with what they had to work with. But at a certain point, like, it's just, like, hey, let's call it. We did what we could. That we're ending our shows that kind of made us what we were. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's just pull the plug and start fresh.
Yeah. Maybe they will. All right, next bit in the lightning round is, God, I'm going to mispronounce this name too, I know it, Arif Zaheer to voice Cleveland Brown. So earlier this year, Cleveland voice actor Mike Henry stepped down from voicing Cleveland on Family Guy, saying that, I love this character, but persons of color should play characters of color. Now, YouTube star Arif Zaheer will be taking over the role. Here's what Zaheer had to say in a statement via Entertainment Weekly. Quote, firstly, I'm eternally grateful to have received this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. When I heard that Mike Henry was stepping down from the role of Cleveland Brown, my favorite cartoon character of all time, I was shocked and saddened, assuming we'd never see him again. When I learned I would get to take over the role, overabundant gratitude. To Mike, you created something truly special, and I promise I will do my absolute best to honor your legacy. To executive producer Rich Apple, executive producer Alex Sulkin, and creator Seth MacFarlane, thank you for this incredible gift. And to the millions of fans who love this show, I promise not to let you down. End quote. Now, I have not watched Family Guy in a very long time. Taylor, you?
I haven't either. I was really hoping you have seen it recently.
Well, it's an important moment, I guess, for TV. We've seen a lot of cases of Black characters not being voiced by Black actors and a lot of people stepping down. There was Jenny Slate on Netflix's Big Mouth that comes to mind. So it's nice that they're getting a person of color to voice a character of color. And I don't know this YouTube star, never heard of him before we read the show, but if he is as passionate about voicing Cleveland Brown as he appears to be, then I say they made the right call.
Yeah. Zaheer, to me, I have not seen Family Guy in a while. I have not seen Zaheer's work. Mm-hmm. But the amount of positivity that has come out of this story.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen the internet before. I'm not speaking anything that's like, oh, that's news to me. Stories like this aren't met with 100% positivity.
Yeah.
And this one certainly isn't, but it's a lot more than I was expecting. And a lot of people were just saying how talented Zaheer is and how great of an impression he has of the Cleveland Brown character.
Oh, nice.
So that's really cool to see. And I I would love to see him voice this character. It's just overall the show. I'm not going to lie to anybody here. I'm not going to watch Family Guy because they recast Cleveland Brown. Man. I will definitely check out clips to see how he does in the role because I'm pretty sure he's going to smash it. Plus, I love kind of seeing YouTube stars like get these crazy roles. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's an avenue that, you know, these Hollywood studios did not want to go into at all. And now they're kind of being forced
to. And now they
to.
Have
it's,
to, yeah.
It's great.
It is kind of funny.
But yeah, it's not going to make me watch the show, but I'm going to check out and see how he does. And I think he's going to smash it based on what everybody's saying, because there's a lot of positivity around this story. And that's awesome to me.
Well, yeah. Well, then, yeah, good for him. That's awesome. All right, last bit of the lightning round is that the Emmys happened and records were broken. So we record this show on Saturdays, and the Emmys were last Sunday. So you have probably seen the list of winners by now. But in case you weren't aware, you should know that there were a few records broken. So Schitt's Creek, with 9 wins across the primetime show and the creative arts show, which were the day before, that's like the smaller behind-the-scenes stuff, now holds the record for most wins of a single season of comedy. Before that, it was Amazon's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which was at 8 wins. Schitt's Creek is also the only show ever to win all 7 major comedy awards. So that's both Best Actors, both Best Actresses, Writing, Directing, Best Comedy Series, all that. So that is insane. If you haven't seen Schitt's Creek, all of it, except for the final season, because that comes out on October 7th, all of it is on Netflix. The show is genuinely really funny. It has a slow start in the season one, but I feel like most comedy shows do. It's just really, really funny. Go watch Schitt's Creek. Another record broken was Zendaya, who won for Outstanding Actress in a Drama Series for her HBO show Euphoria. And at 24... that makes her the youngest winner of the award. So that was really cool. And I know there was this really weird thing on Twitter. I forget what news, you know, organization published it, but the headline said something. Biggest upset of the night was Zendaya winning over, like, you know, these industry titans like Jennifer Aniston and, you know, I forget the actress's name, but she won last year for Killing Eve. So, you know, people have won tons and tons of awards. You know, it's an upset. It's an underdog. And people were just being like, who's upset about this? And I thought it was just a really funny that a lot of people didn't know that there's another meaning of the word upset. So also other big winners, of course, were Watchmen and Succession, which is what sort of fueled me to want to watch Succession because it won several awards. But yeah, I just thought that was really cool. Some interesting records that were broken. Did you check out the Emmys at all? I didn't watch the full ceremony, but I just was very, very happy to see Schitt's Creek sweeping all those awards. But did you check out any of it, or were you excited about any of the winners, Taylor?
I did not. I really need to check out Schitt's Creek. By the way, the name of the show.
Oh, it's great. God,
it's just the name of the show.
Yeah. S-C-H-I-T-T apostrophe S.
Yep. I keep hearing about it, and everybody keeps saying it's so funny and so great. And the fact that it won all these awards kind of tells me, like, oh,
that is so, I definitely need to go watch it. That is so surprising, because I started watching, I want to say, in its third or fourth season. It just ended with 6 seasons, so about midway through the series, I started watching it. And I always thought it was kind of underrated. Like, I didn't know a whole lot of people that watched it, and now here it is. Winning all of the awards, and it's just like it's grown into like this beloved comedy. Yeah, it's super funny and gets very heartwarming because it takes these terrible people who have a lot of wealth and then just takes away all of their wealth, and then you sort of see how they, you know, adjust to living a life that they would call squalor, which is, you know, just a normal life.
I'm not trying to hate here, but that sounds a lot like Arrested Development.
Yeah, yeah, it's similar, but different in its own ways.
Zendaya's win, like, that is a crazy thing to me at 24 years old. Win, and also, I believe The Mandalorian took a bunch of awards as well, which...
Probably.
I know it's a big thing, but I didn't expect that to do well at the Emmys.
Yeah, not in the prime time, because it wasn't nominated for any of, like, the acting or anything, but I think it did at the creative arts you know, behind the scenes sort of stuff. Yeah.
Probably so. I mean, we added this story at the very last second. I could have done a little bit of research, but
we did. It's okay.
I wanted to throw an excuse out there to myself.
Nice. All right. Well, that's all of the news. So let's move on to what we are working on and where people can find us. So Taylor, why don't you go first?
First off, go check out the Nerd Stash show, our latest episode. We had a great discussion about Microsoft buying Bethesda. And it lasted, strangely, what, about 45, 50 minutes?
Just on that, yes.
We did not even expect that at all. We just kept going, like, peeling back, like, okay, what is this going to mean? And, like, it was a great conversation. I just feel like we could just spend next week doing the same thing. And it would be just as, like, interesting to talk about.
There's just so much stuff to that story. It's insane.
So definitely check that out. Check out stuff at the Nerd Stash. Also, check out at Rambo Factor on Twitter. Sometimes I'll tweet out some dumb stuff. It might be entertaining to you. It might not. Who knows? But you can't tell unless you follow me.
Nice. As for myself, this past week, I've just been writing news over on thenerdstash.com. I also finished a couple of WatchMojo scripts, but I won't have any videos up until next month. So I'll talk about them later. And you can also find me on Twitter at @avatar_Johnny. But that is it for another episode of Nerds Talk Movies. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Nerdstash Show and join our Discord at the Nerdstash Community. Please check out the site and please, please subscribe to the show. But thank you so much for listening and thank you, Taylor, for joining me. Everyone, take care.